In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
One of our first big investigations here on the iSpy Radio Show was to expose the effort to remove four hydroelectric dams on the Klamath River in southern Oregon and northern California. When last we left things, the deal was dead because Republicans in Congress refused to pay for it. The deal's expired, and you would think that this would be the end of it. But nothing is ever dead when it comes to the left wing, not even voters. What is and has been happening in the Klamath Basin is the model for the naked heart of the environmental movement and their complete disregard for laws or for people. They don't care about other people. They only care about their vision of what they believe the environment ought to be, which is nature minus the presence of mankind. The left uses manipulated public meeting laws to create the appearance of public support for their agenda. They use that fake support to demonstrate to lawmakers the need for a law. They use the power of law to legally enforce their will on the local people who don't support and never supported their agenda to begin with. It becomes illegal for people to use their own land in the way that they want to, whether it's farming or ranching or logging or mining or what have you. We're going to start by talking about some new developments in the Klamath Basin that are an attempt to go around Congress and to go around the people in the area to impose the Obama administration's will and to kick farmers off their land. And we'll talk about what Hillary will do if elected. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to take a more lighthearted turn and have a broader discussion about pop culture. We'll be talking with Brett Smith. He's the artist behind the Clinton Cash graphic novel. Now, this takes the Clinton Cash book, which was a very intricate expose on the Clinton, well, money laundering machine. You know, you've got to meet people where they are. And the graphic novel version of Clinton Cash is designed to wake up the next generation to how the Clintons and politicians like them get around pesky laws in order to enrich themselves, their donors, and their political operatives. But it's encouraging to hear how this book is waking up the youth and that people like Brett are not surrendering the culture wars to the left. Because unlike the Clintons, you should not be able to buy democracy. To talk about the situation in the Klamath Basin, I'd like to welcome Larry Kogan to the show. He has more than 25 years of international business and law experience, including planning and policy matters. Larry, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, thank you very much for bringing me back on. I appreciate it.
So we've got the situation in the Klamath. Let's get really a situation recap. The original agreements have expired, but now there appear to be new agreements in place. Where do things lie right now?
Well, the government, through the Bureau of Reclamation, which is a division of the Interior Department, is pushing very strongly at securing the implementation of several different basin agreements that otherwise would have needed to be approved by Congress. Now they've done a workaround since the earlier part of the year, and they believe that they don't need congressional approval, even though it involves federal jurisdiction over matters, and likely federal money because the bills even mention it. Basically, they're doing a workaround. Congress needs to review what otherwise should be looked at as a tribal water rights settlement with a number of federally recognized tribes situated in southern Oregon and northern California. And they've broken this tribal water rights settlement into pieces so that people don't see past the silo walls. Okay, Congress has a practice of having to review that and then ratify it because federal monies are definitely required to implement those types of agreements. And they involve more than one state. And since Oregon and California have a water allocation compact which addresses many, if not all, of the issues that are currently addressed in these separate agreements, the question is, why aren't they making reference to this 1956 or 57 compact that President Eisenhower signed into law?
Well, you know, there's always been something dodgy about this effort to remove the dams and claim they're doing all of it to save the fish. I mean, if the dams are such a big problem, why not simply build new and improved fish ladders to get the fish up and past the dams? I mean, that would solve everything. The dams would stay in place. So you've got ratepayers still getting their electricity at lower rates. The fish have access to the streams, upstreams. Farmers and irrigators have water. The tribes are able to fish. Problem solved. I mean, why not do the simple fix here? And instead, the only solution here is they have to pull out the dams.
The fish is a false excuse for doing it. They've got two levers. The federal government has two levers in which to assert federal jurisdiction and control over lands that otherwise would be subject to state jurisdiction and that are privately owned. They use the Endangered Species Act to classify species as either threatened or endangered, and they create a whole narrative around that effort. At the same time, they look to federally recognized tribes in this nebulous, broad concept of federal trust obligation owed to tribes. It's moral guilt, it's moral white guilt, it's reparations, it's et cetera. But the left, the progressives, don't want to talk about that. They just talk about it as if it's a certain obligation, that it must be fulfilled because it's legally enforceable. This is a fiction. It's all created as a fiction, legally speaking. And it's limited to the Ninth Circuit of all the federal circuits. The problem we have here is that once a tribal water rights settlement is approved by Congress, it takes regional federal law, converts it into national federal law, and creates new national legal precedent that is adverse to private property rights and individual landowner interests. They go to the water to grab the land.
And I think that is the real key there, like what you just said. They can control the land if they have control of the water. I just look at this, and the agreements had stalled out, but they keep coming. I mean, they're like ants. They keep attacking the castle, and until you kill the queen, they're just going to keep coming and coming and coming. Is there a queen here, one big pile of money that is driving all of this?
Well, see, the interesting thing here is that in order to achieve their federal ends, and this is coming directly out of the White House of Barack Obama, and is being pushed through the states, which are liberal progressive enclaves. They seek to divide local communities against themselves.
Yes.
In order to push the federal agenda forward. Now, in Klamath Falls, that is exactly what they're doing. Even in Siskiyou County, they're trying to divide the community against one another, though it's a bit more discreet than in Klamath. In Klamath, you've got pretty much mobs of irrigators who are looking to derive a benefit from these agreements. The Klamath Water and Power Agency was that intergovernmental agency vehicle established in 2008 that was run, operated, and managed by the same people at the same time that were managing and operating as directors, board of directors of the Klamath Irrigation District. They sat simultaneously on the board of the Klamath Water Users Association, and they sat simultaneously on the board of the Klamath Basin KBID. District. There's 22 districts on the Klamath Irrigation Project. Several of the same people sat on the boards of four organizations at the same time to pursue private gain using their public office. That is a blatant violation of Oregon ethics law.
Oh, sure. And conflict of interest, to be sure. All right, everyone, stay with us. Coming up, we're going to talk about those allegations of fraud. Lots more with Lawrence Kogan on what is happening down in the Klamath Basin. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the situation down in the Klamath Basin and the effort to pull out those four perfectly operating hydroelectric dams, all in the guise to save the fish, although that is certainly rather dubious, to be sure. And to talk about all of that, we're talking with Larry Kogan. He's with the KoganLawGroup.com, if you'd like to go visit his website there. And so during the break there, we're talking about several things. First of all, let's get the issue of fraud out of the way. Because we mentioned that. What fraud are you seeing happening down here?
Okay, there's election fraud. Okay, the minority board members of the Klamath Irrigation District, supported by the board members who ran the district for 25 years as a private fiefdom, their own private candy store, initiated a recall campaign to withdraw the three majority board members that are opposing all of the Klamath Basin agreements and the intent of the federal government to push forth this agenda to take out the four dams, to idle farmland, to remove small and medium-sized farms so they can make the Klamath Basin a pristine basin and allow the larger farmers who are in favor of the federal agenda to give them the opportunity to rake in all the profits from farming their lands collectively grouped in good water years. Now, this is a lot to take in, but the federal plan is to idle the land. There is sustainable development. There are sustainable development issues involved here. This is a bio-zone, a bio-region. The U.S. signed the treaty, the Biological Diversity Treaty, and they're implementing it through the idling of farmlands in Oregon and Northern California.
Now, the Biodiversity Treaty that you mentioned, is that a U.N. thing, or is this just something more on the federal level?
It's a U.N. treaty that the United States signed and ratified under Bush 41 and Clinton. And this requires the idling of certain lands in order to protect species and biodiversity.
So in all of this effort to save the fish and all of the other things that they put out there as to their reasons for doing this, do they ever publicly mention that treaty, the biodiversity thing? We're doing this
because
we have a treaty that we have to fulfill, and that means idling the land.
Right. They don't do that, and they also don't mention the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which is acronymed UN DRIP. It's almost like a Chinese water torture. And that recognizes federal tribes' ancestral and aboriginal rights to lands that they ceded in exchange for reservations. So what this is an effort to do is respect the federal government's quote-unquote absolute trust obligation to a dependent sovereign, all these tribes, because they require federal appropriations in order to survive, and that includes protecting, recognizing their aboriginal rights and their treaty rights that are not even mentioned in the treaty, but they're deemed by Ninth Circuit liberal courts to have been reserved by the tribes when they ceded their land centuries ago.
And this is not happening just in the Klamath area. You're seeing evidence of this happening in Montana and Idaho and other places, correct?
Absolutely true. The federal government has designs and is working currently in eastern Washington and in Idaho to do the same things. There are four dams on the Snake River in Idaho that they want to remove. That would even be a larger dam removal project than the Klamath dams. All for the same reasons. Respect for these rights that are claimed by tribes that the government has a legal obligation to protect, and the Endangered Species Act. Same pretenses.
There's also within this, what you're seeing is you know, and we alluded to this in the first segment there, these conflicts of interest, and that these people are serving on multiple boards, and they're all doing it for personal gain. All of this, as you say, is to take over the land, especially since the land without the water is of no value. So those people that are doing this for personal gain, how are they getting anything from this?
Well, see, the interesting thing is the Klamath Water and Power Agency, COAPA, has been under federal investigation for several years because $38 to $48 million went unaccounted for. Okay? And that money was allocated to pay off the lead farmers and ranchers who were running COAPA at the time for idling their land. So they pumped their well water and got paid over fair market value for their well water because they had to idle this, they couldn't use surface water. The federal government shut down the water. Okay, and that was in service to this UN Tribal and Endangered Species Act agenda. So they got a lot of money. They also had programs that would be used to implement when the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement came into force. Unfortunately, that agreement has since died, but they're resurrecting it through new agreements. And through agreements that, and some of these agreements are being cooked in the oven right now without anybody other than the feds, the states, and those who are supporting the agenda knowing about it. They have stakeholder meetings where they require non-disclosure agreements.
Yes.
Congressman Doug LaMalfa from Northern California had sent his people in, and they told him, we're not signing any agreements. The first two times that worked. The third time they did this, Edward Sheets, the facilitator of the Klamath Basin Agreements, and the other federal officials, they packed up the meeting and left.
So much for transparency.
No transparency, no accountability. And the fact that they're funneling money through intergovernmental organizations that are intended for the farmers who support their agenda is outrageous.
Yeah, yeah.
These people should be arrested. These people should be fined. But the state of Oregon, you know, is not exactly transparent and accountable to the people either.
No, they are sure not. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Coming up, we're going to be talking some more about how these people are profiting. Stay with us. Lots more with Larry Koch. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Larry Kogan of the Kogan Law Group. You can just his website is Kogan Law Group, and that's K-O-G-A-N, lawgroup.com, if you'd like to go visit that. And we're talking about the situation on the Klamath Basin there. And they have, since those original agreements had expired, they have a new agreement that will, in fact, remove the dams if they can push this all through, apparently without any kind of congressional approval. And so there's a lot still to unpack here, and it really seems to keep coming down to fraud, and also the fact that people are profiting to the tune of millions on this. You had mentioned during the break to me about that there have been there was an IG report that said that there were likely federal laws violated. This was two years ago, and it has to do with the money that's being funneled. Talk to us a little bit about that, and has anybody been punished for this?
Well, there was an investigation launched, I believe, in 2014 or 15. Actually, it was 2015, by the Office of Special Counsel, which is an independent federal agency charged with undertaking investigations of alleged violations of law. And they found, the OSC found, that there were likely violations of federal law as a result of the Klamath Water and Power Agency use of about somewhere between $38 and $48 million to pay certain irrigators to pump water from their wells when land was idle because of surface water drought situation. This organization was formed in 2008. It expired at the end of 2015. The OSC issued its findings in June of 2015, sent it to the Department of Interior's office, the Solicitor General's office. They then sent it to the Office of Inspector General of Interior Department, which just recently issued its report. Its report was actually leaked by a whistleblower within the last 2 weeks. And it finds that the Bureau of Reclamation did not have the legal authority to dispense with all that money to particular irrigators. Now, the goal here was to get the irrigator's loyalty, because the COAPA was basically a practice run for the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement that was supposed to have been implemented and ratified by Congress. At the end of 2015, Congress decided not to ratify it. It expired on its own terms. However, the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement had provisions that would allow the parties to renegotiate that agreement, which would remove the four dams and provide money for them. Then they also negotiated behind closed doors the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, KPFA, which provided more money and would have given another dam to the federal government for control, the Link River Dam.
So to boil this down, it sounds like the federal government is inappropriately using money, giving that to the people that are supporting their efforts to pull out these dams and to put the land into idle. And it doesn't sound like anybody has since been punished for any of this. No firings, nobody fines, no jail.
Nobody's been punished. Nope. You can be sitting on three or four boards of directors, which former directors of the Klamath Irrigation District did. We have proof of that. And right now, the Ethics Commission in the state of Oregon is looking at that. Now, they wanted to make sure that the opposition could not do any more damage, so they initiated a recall campaign to withdraw, you know, to have the three current majority members who oppose the Basin Agreements and recall them from office. They use the state election laws, which unfortunately discriminate between city, county, and state officials who are subject to recall as compared to local irrigation district officials who are subject to recall. The standards in your state law are different. You can be subject to corruption and false statements and false campaigns in local irrigation districts because the people who circulate the petitions for recall, and the chief petitioners of the petitioners for recall do not have to certify the truth of the statements that they assert as the basis for the recall. There are people who were chief petitioners here that lied in the statements. They said that they replicated the state form that is otherwise applicable to state, county, and local officials. They lied about that because they removed the certification of truth statement. Now, if you can't be held accountable for lying in a petition recall, in a recall petition, then your recall petition is not verified. The facts are unverified. Okay? The state has done nothing so far except said that they would look into it. As a result of this, one of the directors has already been recalled, and they only lost by a very slim measure of 12 votes. Because people then became concerned that there could be fraud here. For certain, there's fraud here. The question is whether the state will act.
Yeah.
Whether the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, who was notified in our filings.
Yeah, and
we did file.
That is what it always comes down to, unfortunately, is whether or not the people that are supposed to take action do take action. I'd like to kind of wrap this into an ongoing series that we've had talking about what things would look like under a Hillary administration. What we're hearing from you is that these agencies are dividing people, putting them at war with each other. They're using these federal agencies to impose ideology and UN interests rather than doing what they ought to be doing, which is promoting U.S. interests and also allowing people to take possession of this land and promote freedom and prosperity. So under a Hillary administration, what would you expect? I mean, is this sort of thing going to get better? Is it going to get worse? Are you going to see – what do you expect to see?
Hillary is an avowed believer in UN sustainable development. She's an avowed believer in one global governance. She's a profound believer in no borders. She doesn't believe in the United States Constitution, though she lies about believing in the United States Constitution. Okay? She rejects the Enlightenment principles upon which the Constitution is based and upon which the founders formed this nation. She will pursue greater government intrusion in your private lives. She will promote fewer constitutional rights to protect your land, your water, your privacy, and she will also make sure that the federal government will be involved in all of your daily economic life.
Yeah, yeah. And that's...
She is a liar extraordinaire, and she builds on her husband's legacy and on Barack Obama's legacy. And Barack Obama takes the perspective of a foreigner when he acts as president of the United States. He is not. He is the first foreign president of the United States.
That's actually a pretty good way of putting it. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock here, and I have to agree with you. Unfortunately, it looks like Hillary is going to weaponize a lot of these agencies and use them to promote her donors' interests rather than the interests of the American people.
You know what they call this? The military. The military calls this lawfare, okay? Lawfare.
That's actually a pretty good way to put it. Larry, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much again.
And coming up next, Brett Smith. He is the artist behind the graphic novel version of Clinton Cash. Before we get going, I'd like to address the UN Treaty on Biodiversity, which Larry Kogan noted in that last segment. It's what's behind the effort to remove the dams in the Klamath to take farmland and ranches out of production. As of 2016, all UN member states, with the exception of the United States, have ratified the treaty. The U.S. has signed it, but not ratified it, and has not announced any plans to ratify it anytime soon. But, and here is the entire thing in a nutshell, as you heard, the Obama administration is implementing it anyway, ignoring the rule of law and using the Department of Interior to enforce a foreign treaty that Congress has never ratified, to spend money and reward their allies and punish dissent. Unelected officials pushing their ideology and the will of foreign interests on us. And under Hillary, you can expect to see more of it. Speaking of Hillary, I hope you've all seen the movie Clinton Cash, which is available on Breitbart. If you have not seen it, you definitely need to see that before you vote and share it with your pro-Hillary friends. That movie is based on the book Clinton Cash by Peter Schweitzer, and there is also a graphic novel based on that book as well. I'd like to welcome Brett Smith, who is the artist of the graphic novel. Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, I was an editor for 20-some years. This is the first chance I think I've ever had to talk to somebody that was involved in graphic novels. They really kind of came in as I was sort of moving out of that industry. I guess the best place to start is, how did you get involved in all of this?
You know, I was approached by Peter and Dan Fluette because they had we were interested in taking the graphic rights and adapting the original book into a graphic novel, and they were looking for kind of a vision and direction. And I have over 20 years working in comics, advertising, animation, and you know, that's kind of how it started.
I guess when I think graphic novels, I don't think politics very much. So why did they decide to bring out a graphic novel version of it?
Well, and especially this book, because it's an unusual one to adapt, you know, if you were to pick one. You know, and really, I think they wanted to make it more accessible and understandable, and, you know, and also do something within the pop culture realm, you know, which would, you know, fight the culture war, but also get the information out to voters, you know, Gen Xers, Gen Yers, the truth about the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation and how they've basically auctioned U.S. policy for profit over the years.
You know, maybe we ought to actually explain what a graphic novel is for people that aren't familiar with that term, especially, you know, the older people, wiser people is maybe a better way to put it in our audience out there. So what exactly is a graphic novel and how does that compare to a comic book?
Yeah, you know, graphic novels have been around since the 70s, and they're just a long-form comic book. It's usually something that's over 100 pages. And it's like I say, you know, the difference between a graphic novel and a comic book is usually about 80 pages and $15. And in our case, we have a hardcover, and it's really high production quality. You know, it's got beautifully full-color interior pages. So it's a really high-end, I like to say, high-end, sophisticated comic book.
So I think there's a lot of people that will read these graphic novels as opposed to reading the actual Clinton Cash book. In terms of adapting the book, we'll do it that way. In terms of adapting the book, how did you go through deciding what you would move into the graphic novel and what parts that you would leave out?
You know, most of the stuff that's in Peter's book, the highlights are all in our book, and you know, a lot of the exhaustive research and detail that's in the original Clinton Cash is in our book. But we kind of boil it down to its essentials, and we also employ visual storytelling. And we have a lot of satire and parody and humor and a lot of mockery. We lampoon the left in this book, Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show has done to us over the last 40 years. That was a lot of fun. You know, I was really interested in kind of taking some of the tactics of the left that they've used on us within the culture war and kind of turning it around and using it on them. And, you know, we have a lot of funny and witty and very cutting panels with illustrations, you know, which are juxtaposed against, you know, all the information. And, you know, that stuff sticks with you. And I think it's, you know, with the visuals, it makes it more understandable. It breaks things down. A lot of these things in Clinton Cash are very complex. And I think with the visuals, it helps it not only, you know, the reader understand it, but it also helps the reader retain the information, which is really important.
Well, and it also brings it to life a lot more. You know, there's a sample available on Amazon.com if people want to go look at that, and you can download it to your Kindle, or if you have it on your PC, you can do it there. And just in the little sample that they show, it's like two pages. And it's talking about the earthquake there that happened in Haiti, and it just jumps off the page at you. I mean, and the artwork is just fantastic, it brings that home in such a way that just reading it on a flat nonfiction book probably wouldn't do.
Yeah, I think especially for Gen X and Gen Yers, I think graphic storytelling beats certainly political ads and political speeches and white papers. And maybe I think a lot of the time basic prose, I think it beats it all to hell every day of the week. You know, our two generations grew up on video games and computer graphics and now tablets and all this tech. And we're used to processing visual and verbal information at the same time. And that's not only kind of like preferable, it's also kind of natural to us. And, you know, I also believe that these days you not only have to have a compelling message, but you have to have a compelling image and compelling visuals, because there's so much static and also information out there that you have to cut through in order to get your message across. And, you know, like Marshall McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And, you know, for the right, they need to start using different mediums to communicate to people, especially ones that are subversive like Glenn Cash's graphic novel.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go ahead and take a break right there. We'll have lots more with Brett Smith. He is the graphic artist behind the graphic novel based on Glenn Cash. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, helping you keep an eye on big government. And this, if I had to sum up the show, I'd say it's all about money. Talking about what's going down in the Klamath Basin, and now we're talking about the Clinton Cash graphic novel, and we're doing that with Brent Smith. He's the artist behind that. And I'd actually like to read this this review off of Amazon. This is probably the most informative, inconceivable, and horrifying graphic novel I have ever read. It should be classified under horror, not current events. I hate politics and politicians. I hate political correctness. I love truth, even brutal honesty, integrity, and the inherited goodness of humanity from God. Nonetheless, you can imagine how disgusted and disappointed I was throughout reading this graphic novel about the subject, not the brilliant producers of the product. While reading, I kept Googling all of the names of the Clintons, cronies, companies, dictators, etc. Mind you, I am not so naive to believe everything on the internet, but it is quite amazing to read headlines about these corrupt and evil people. It was almost like that queasy feeling you get when you're watching a spy movie, and you think to yourself, wow, this would be totally scary if it were true. I had that exact queasy feeling throughout my reading experience. I feel like I need to throw up and then go lie down. I am so disheartened and saddened that people in power, particularly in politics, whose job it is to serve the public, will compromise their beliefs, values, essentially their soul, for more power and more money. I cannot fathom how they can also get away with this sea of corruption. The writers and artists did a phenomenal job for bringing to color the vastness of the evil and corrupt global Clinton machine. Highly recommended for those who can stomach the truth, regardless of your own political beliefs. Now excuse me while I go throw up again. That's awesome. Beautiful. I mean, that's got to just thrill you to no end.
Oh, it's just review of the year. I mean, that's just he hit everything. And when you know as the editor and the creative director on the book, when I read stuff like that, and of course I pass it on to my creative team, the artists, and Chuck, the writer, we're just all thrilled. I mean, that's a victory, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were able to kind of turn Peter's original book on its head and turn it into something entertaining and, like I said, accessible to people like that guy. Yeah. And he's going to remember, you know, and he loved it. So I'm hoping to get more graphic novels out there for people like that.
Yes, that would be awesome. And, you know, I think this brings up the wider discussion of pop culture and the fact that those on the right are simply not involved in these kinds of things normally. They want to push out these white papers. They have all of these think tanks, and that's great. You know, it solves a certain issue. But there's also that need to entertain while informing people, and I think that that's what your book really accomplishes.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my aim, because you know that's going to make it fun, and it's going to make it an interesting rock. You know, I mean that review is so classic. I tell people when you read the book, you'll laugh, you'll cry, and I promised Peter and the publishers, Chuck and I both promised them, you know, our job really on this adaptation is to inform and to abhor.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. You read this and you're just like, this is like something out of James Bond. This is like Spectre, you know, because you have the Clintons who are in power dealing with, tin horn dictators, guys like Paul Kagame and Riek Machar. I mean, these are horrible people that you would think about in like a Bond film. But you're absolutely right. You know, the right has kind of seeded the culture war by kind of just preaching to the choir with documentaries and, you know, books and white papers and speeches and, you know, political ads. Sure, that stuff is needed, and the left certainly does it, so you've got to fight fire with fire. But how about, fighting fire with fire as far as the pop culture war, where there's kind of a vacuum of material from the right?
Well, why do you think that is? Why do people on the right, they gravitate to these think tanks? I mean, you got these billionaires out there that will fund those kinds of things. And I guess the other thing that kind of upsets me about the way that these billionaires on the right will spend their money is they buy these 30-second political ads and they kind of pat themselves on the back for doing so. Well, that 30-second political ad keeps a 60-minute program on the air that pretty much fights against everything that you're trying to fight for yourself. Why is it that the people on the right don't see the need that they need to get involved in entertainment and these other kinds of pop culture issues?
You know, honestly, I have no idea, other than maybe they don't want to spend the money on that stuff. They don't look at it as an investment. They see it as some kind of expense, or maybe they'd rather, you know, have first class or, you know, jet travel. I don't know. But, you know, when you don't have something, you know, to counter what the left has done, you know, that's how you change the culture from within. You know, that's why it's called subversion. And there's a need for the right to do more subversive type of entertainment and art. And I don't know if it's because they think that all artists are leftists. That's certainly not true. Most of my creative team, you know, all lean right just to one degree or another. A couple of my guys are Democrats, but they're interested in doing business and creating interesting things. And, you're talking about ads. We recently took portions of the book and we animated them into little minute ads, info ads with voiceover actors. One is about Hillary's reset. It stars Hillary and Putin playing poker. You know, we have another one which has Gilbert Chigori and Riek Machar and Paul Kagame and some of the, you know, the worst people in the world, basically, that the Clintons do business with. So there's all kinds of things we could be doing: animation, short films, more graphic novels. We're going to be doing a project in the future where, coming up, where we're going to be taking history and adapting it into graphic novel form. It's going to be the revolution, and we're going to be basically kind of rebooting or rebranding the founders, and that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, that does sound fun. We've only got about a minute here with you. Do you find that people in the millennial age group, are they really embracing Trump, or are they still kind of in that Bernie Sanders camp?
You know, most of the ones I know, even the former Bernie ones, are embracing Trump over Hillary because, you know, they're able to, you know, they're not buying the media's narrative. You know, a lot of these younger millennials they're online, they're on Twitter, they're following, all kinds of alternative media where they think they're getting the straight story. So I think that's why they're gravitating towards it. And also, she's this 30-year, you know, manicured and sculpted and just plastic politician. Hmm. Trump is so dynamic and authentic and bold and big. And I think that's also, you know, I think that to them, that's authentic. And I think that's an interesting, you know, an important word is people are looking for things that are authentic or authenticity. And with status quo, 30-year-old, career politicians like Hillary, that's not authentic. That's exactly what everybody kind of abhors.
Yes. Well, it's hard to be authentic when your donors are the ones moving your lips. So, all right, let's go ahead and take a break. Lots more with Brent Smith. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking to Brent Smith. He is a professional commercial artist working in the comic book industry as a color artist, a storyboard artist in the advertising industry, and a graphic artist for multiple clients. He is the artist behind the graphic novel Clinton Cash, based on the nonfiction book by the same name. You can find that on Amazon.com, and we'll make sure that we link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And so going into the break there, we were talking about, you know, what it's like to, you know, that the right really needs to be involved in the pop culture much more. And one of the things that has really ticked me off this election cycle is all of these well-paid actors on very left and operating in a very left industry in Hollywood. What's it like for you as somebody on the right to be involved in what is probably traditionally seen as a left-leaning industry?
I've never had any real trouble. Chuck has had some issues. He's basically kind of been blacklisted largely for Marvel and DC, largely because the editors all kind of lean left. And, Chuck is open about his politics. I've been a colorist. So, Chuck's a writer. So I was kind of further back in the creative, kind of on the totem pole. So they never really paid any attention to me. But now that I'm out front on this project, I've got a lot of friends on the left who I've been very tolerant of over the years because I've had to work with them, who are, you know, not necessarily supporting the success of the book or, the reason, behind the book, as to why we did it.
Yeah.
So, it's the typical liberal double standard. And it's like, I like to say if progressives and liberals didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards whatsoever.
Hmm. That's true. In putting out this graphic novel and you're working very closely with Peter Schweitzer, and was there anything that just really stood out to you, where you just sort of sat back and felt kind of stunned to hear about it?
Haiti. And we make Haiti a center point of the book. We did dramatize one portion of the book where we actually tell a story of a Haitian family which kind of weaves in and out of the book throughout it. And because what the Clintons did in Haiti is just so abhorrent. It's so disgusting. The Haitians lost 50% of their GDP like within 11 minutes of that earthquake. And here comes the Clintons talking about bringing in jobs and infrastructure, power, cell phones, bills, make Haiti the first wireless nation ever and handing out free cell phones. The only problem is the minutes weren't free. They built all kinds of taxpayer money, which was funneled into the Clinton Foundation from Haiti, and they left Haiti far worse than when they came in. And recently, the Haitians, Clintons were thinking about going back for seconds, take after Hurricane Matthew, and the Haitians said, "No thanks. We don't need another scandal, and we don't want your help," which I thought was pretty damning.
Well, and there's still like billions of dollars missing that were supposed to go to Haiti and never arrived.
Well, 60,000 jobs for a clothing, manufacturer, which only turned out to about 5,000. You've got Warren Buffett, sending in FEMA trailers that made people sick with Clayton Holmes. Dennis O'Brien with DigiCell with the free cell phones, but not the free minutes. These are all donors to the Clinton Foundation. It's just when you look at what these people are doing in broad daylight, and especially when it's laid out in the book in graphic version with all the visuals there, it's just sort of like, how is this happening? Mm. In broad daylight, and why aren't Republicans doing anything about it? Where are the Republicans?
Yeah.
Other than Trump, he seems to be the only one who really wants to fight.
In putting together the book, did you kind of get the sense that a lot of Republicans are just afraid of Hillary Clinton, afraid of confronting her on some of these schemes? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, Rubio was out yesterday talking about how Trump needs to stop talking about WikiLeaks. Ted Cruz said early on in the primaries that he wouldn't go and tackle Bill's affairs or the Clinton or how Hillary treated Bill's accusers. Hillary called those women Bill's rodeo queens. Carville and Stephanopoulos with drag a dollar through a trailer park. I mean, it's like Camille Paglia said, it's not Bill's picadillos. What's really the problem is how Hillary treated those women, which is just horrible. And I will say that Monica Lewinsky does make an appearance in her graphic novel in a very funny way.
Well, I think
delivering pizzas.
Wow. I think that is something that is really unique about the graphic novel approach to this is that you really are able to inject some humor into it. And it's needed because, some of it is just so shocking to hear how they've abused these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I told all my artists, I said, we need to be, politically incorrect in this book and we need to not virtue signal. We need to fight back. It's like you're talking about, why don't these Republicans fight back? Why don't they fight fire with fire and be willing to, get down into the mud and at least give tit for tat? And I was really interested in doing that in this book and kind of, not pulling any punches because Peter's original book doesn't pull any punches, the original source material. So I said, we got to stay true to the source material, but we're going to tell this through satire, which is, obviously the most dangerous form of humor. But I think very effective with this type of material. And like I said, it's kind of like we lampoon the left, just kind of like Saturday Night Live or The Daily Show.
Yes,
we just rip them apart with wit and mockery and parody.
And it's time that we start hitting back on that same level. Brent Smith, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Appreciate the support.
All right, thank you. It is time for us to get going, but before we do, to those people who are considering voting for anyone but Trump, all of those principles you say you stand on are about to be made illegal under a Hillary administration. You shouldn't be able to buy democracy, but that is what's about to happen. It's either vote for Trump or surrender the American experiment to those who seek to subvert it. Don't let that happen. Check out our website. We do have some important links there for you to both of our guests. And be sure to share those, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.